You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Prost, everybody. Good evening, and I got to get this one thing in here real quick, but I got to try it out. Anyway, I hope we have a lot
did
of fun
Did you say
tonight.
Prost?
I did.
Spell that.
P-R-O-O-S-T.
Prost, Prost. Prost. Is that a new aviation term that was just created this week?
Yeah, it's cheers.
Okay. Kind of like L'chaim?
Viel plaisir van de van. I know, but have a good time tonight.
I will, even if I don't understand half the things you say.
It's my best shot at it. But anyway, you're Mark Eppner. I'm Al Waterloo. It's 8 p.m. We're at the PWK airport. What does that mean?
It must be time for Simple Flight Radio.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Simple Flight Aviation Radio.
Simple Flight Aviation
Radio. Is there any other kind of Simple Flight Radio? I just like to say the word aviation, I guess.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't think there is. I did a Google search, and we were the first people that came up. So,
although I think there is a simpleflight.com or something.
It's yeah, there is.
Yeah, so well, that's not right. Us. We're simpleflight.net.
Simpleflight.net sounds a lot better.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, anyway, everybody, welcome to the show. Let's have a great time tonight. It is 8:04 in the p.m. now, and
we're at PWK, as Al said, and broadcasting as usual from Signature Flight Support.
Yeah.
In their glass studio with beautiful view out to the frigid tundra outside here on the ramp.
It really cooled down.
Oh, my God. 50 degrees yesterday and 30 degrees today or 20-something today.
Yeah, we got some freezing rain overnight. I was supposed to fly earlier today, and we decided not to go because of moderate ice all over the place.
Well, I don't know if you saw any of the cars that were in the lot, and I've seen this all over the different parking lots I've been, if they were there overnight. They're enclosed, it looks like, in glass.
Yeah.
Just a sheet of ice over the entire body of the car. It's pretty amazing.
It is. Oh, it looks, it was kind of pretty, but actually this morning I heard it was pretty slippery out there.
Yeah, yeah, I stayed in today.
Yeah.
Until about 1 o'clock. I was supposed to meet everyone at the airport at 2 o'clock, and if you're listening out there and promised to meet me, you never showed up. I was there all by myself. Welcome to my world.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I was told I think we had a good dinner discussion today that I use awesome too much, but.
I didn't say use it too much. You said, do I use that a lot? And I said, you use it a lot. I
use
said
it
too much.
I use it a healthy amount.
You use it an awesome amount.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, this is going to be a great show this evening. It's always great to be back here. It's my favorite time of the night, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think I've said this before, but I'll say it again, that in the past, I never look forward to Sunday nights because I didn't necessarily, you know, want to get to Monday mornings, but over the last several months doing this on Sunday nights, and now I'm at a wonderful company, and that I look forward to Mondays, that Sunday's kind of getting to be my favorite time of the week.
Absolutely.
Sunday and Monday. I love it.
And guess what? The days are getting longer now, too.
Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
So cool. I use that as a motivator every December 22nd. Right, knowing I've got the brunt of Chicago weather ahead of me, but I say, yeah, the days are getting longer.
Use that as a motivator to get you the 3 extra days to Christmas.
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
No,
but it's more that I am much more of a warm and daylight person than I am a cold and nighttime person.
Yeah, well, that's good. I think we all are.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when I was younger, I didn't mind the cold, but that's maybe why older people moved to Arizona and Florida and all that for the winter.
Speaking of which, I was in both places, both snowbirding places, at the end of December, which we talked about on a couple shows ago. But this week, I was down in Florida.
And so was I.
Yeah, that's right. I think I saw you out on the Gulf of Mexico as we
That's right. I was in a sales meeting, and there was just a couple hours where we did a little team building, went out deep sea fishing, and I caught a few fish. And then I get this wonderful note from Al saying, "Hey, I'm down here too. You want to fly back with us?" Meanwhile, my company has bought me an airline ticket back to Chicago, and I got work to do, but you don't know how hard it was for me to say, you know, I'm going to take the airliner, especially after my trip up there. It was not a great trip. I mean, it was safe, and therefore it was fine, but there was, you know, Last Eaten and an RJ.
Ooh, you flew, what airplane did you fly down on?
That's the other thing. I had a stop in Charlotte.
Ugh.
So we had a 757 to Charlotte, which is fine, but then I was in 190, what is it? The RJ.
Embraer 170?
No, 190. Is there 190?
There is a 190.
Yeah, that's what I was
in. Embraer 190?
It was a very long one. There's lots of seats with dome
first class. Or CRJ-900.
That's the one.
There it is. CRJ-900.
I don't know. I've never flown.
Were there engines on the wings?
I don't even remember.
Oh,
so
my
miserable.
Goodness, Mark. These are the important questions of the night.
When I came back, I was an MD-88 on Delta. it was good. It was really good. And I really wanted to come back with you guys, but to get back in a few hours rather than your all-day, or not ordeal, but your all-day trek turned out to be a better thing for me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I thought that was good. Well, we missed you on that trip home. We would have loved to have given you a ride, but
I watched you on FlightAware. It was great.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. Well, when we landed, you said, "Hey, I got back 12 hours ago, so I guess it's a win-win."
Yeah, you guys had more fun, but I did get some work done, so that was great.
Yeah, good, good. Well, that's great. So we did some pretty fun stuff in aviation this week. You know, you got to ride an airliner. It was down in Port Charlotte, Florida, just south of Sarasota, where you were at.
Yeah.
And it was a great aviation week all around.
Yeah, no, it was. Again, I had a good time. I'm with a new company and a good team, and so that was exciting. But I didn't get behind the controls this week, so that was kind of the bummer for me.
Oh, man.
Yo, man.
For you. Come on, man. Yeah, but anyway, that's hopefully next week you'll get behind the controls.
Yeah, actually we're planning it. But we'll talk about that when we get to this week in aviation history, this week in aviation. Well, we kind of did that one already, and then next week. I'm sorry. It's a weird Sunday night for me.
It kind of is. It's like a full moon or something like that. As soon as we kicked the show off, I started dropping things and all that. And, you know, that's whatever.
You just lost a monitor, too,
see. That's all right. We'll get it. It's like a lost tooth. You know what? Actually, when I was flying for the airline, they had the MFDs were able to, on the airliner that I flew, the Embraer 170, 190, they were able to be MEL'd. So you could imagine a screen just being blank. So there were five screens going across. And one of them could be out, and it was funny because it just looked like it was like a smile with a tooth missing. In the middle.
I can picture that. That's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It was good stuff though. It was. But anyway, we've got, you know, another good snowbird destination.
Oh, for our METAR, if you will, our ATIS tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Where would you go? Where would you go? If you were, you know, let's say Arizona and Florida were closed. Where would you go?
California.
California? Where in California?
Do I get to eat?
Do you get to eat? No, you have to starve.
Well, no, if I'm going to eat, then that's a different destination than if I'm just going for warmth.
You get to eat.
No, if I want to eat and I'm in California, I want to go to San Francisco.
Excellent. Good choice.
Yeah.
So let's see if you're going to San Francisco tonight, what would you need to pack?
I don't know. I think we're going to have to make a call.
I know, but so I had to change it up a little bit tonight.
Uh-oh. You're always changing things up.
Yeah, you got to stay on your toes. So I've always wanted to record an ATIS.
Uh-oh.
And that would be, call me the aviation geek in me coming out, but I recorded San Francisco's ATIS as if I
this is actual?
Yeah, no, I recorded it.
I mean, but it's actually,
yeah, it's the actual watch the weather, the METAR observation.
All right, this ought to be pretty cool.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, I'll try to keep from laughing. Go ahead.
Here we go. I'm throwing myself out here on a line, and probably everybody's be like,
karaoke at its best.
Yeah, right. Here we go. So San Francisco International at its finest.
San Francisco International Airport Information Alpha time 1400 Zulu. Winds 360 at 9, visibility 10. Sky condition few 18,000. Temperature 10, dew point minus 2, altimeter 3019. Landing and departing runways 28 left and 28 right. Advise on initial contact that you have Alpha.
Okay,
that was pretty good. You stumbled
that was
a little.
That's
a good. That was better than I would have done.
You know what? Actually, when we were, where was it going? No, it was at Janesville yesterday. I was trying to listen to the ATIS going in there, and the guy, it took him 5 minutes to record to listen to the ATIS one time, one cycle through.
Oh, yeah, you mean it was just that long?
Yeah, it was that long.
No,
so it was
not
like
5 minutes.
Janesville,
I mean, you're exaggerating.
Tower, METAR. Observation 1553 Zulu, you know, and then it just goes winds, and then there's just this long pause, and then you kept going, and I'm like, okay, what are the winds? 110 at 18, you know, and it's just like, come on, let's get through this thing, you know?
Yeah, I wonder why. Was it a new voice?
I think it was. The guy was training, and he was pretty. I think he was training, but he was kind of picky about people making their call outs and things like that. I guess I would be picky too, but it wasn't. I think it was a pretty new voice, but yeah, it was great.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Actually, I'd like to do something with ATC, and maybe even I can convince these guys to let me record an ATIS here at this one.
Yeah.
I
think there's probably some pretty serious laws behind that.
Yeah, I would suspect so.
But that's all right. Yeah. So, but, you know, I think, maybe, I don't know, maybe we could do a midnight ATIS or something like that.
Yeah, or just pretend.
We'll just start recording our own ATISes for the rest of the Simple Flights, the Simple Flight shows. Why not?
Actually, you know, that's something we should talk about offline. That, I have something there. I've got some ideas. You've got my creative thought processes working here.
Outstanding. Outstanding. But anyway, we talked about what we did this week in aviation. What about on January 13th? What happened in aviation, Mark?
Well, I have something. I'm going to go back to 1942.
Yeah.
And in 1942, while flying a Heinkel, which is different than a Heineken, as a Heinkel HE-280 jet fighter, German test pilot Helmut Schenck, I'm sorry, my apologies to the Schenck family, became the first to use an ejection seat.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was in 1942.
That's awesome.
What can you come up with?
1942? Well, I think you stole my date.
What, you're going to use the ejection seat also?
No, in 1942.
Same year, same day.
Same day, Igor Sikorsky, the pilot.
Is that Igor or Igor?
Igor. I guess Igor.
Igor.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
Thank you. You're welcome. That's an old joke too. I won't go there.
But anyway, Igor Sikorsky pilots the first fully practical single rotor helicopter.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Good thing he didn't need an ejection seat because somebody else already used it that day.
Absolutely. We would have conflicting inventions.
Yeah, wouldn't that be crazy? They were near each other and they had the first midair collection collision with ejection seats.
Yeah, that would be. Shooting from from Germany and one from you know, or I would assume Igor Sikorsky was on Long Island or somewhere near Connecticut. That's where they're
now
based.
You're pushing the limits. We just know it was 1942, and believe it or not, that was before I was born.
Yeah. Was it really? We finally found a date.
Stop it. I'm not even going to indulge you with that conversation.
Yeah. Well, that's good. So, but anyway, what are you looking forward to next week?
Well, from a flying perspective, And I should point out this last week we had two other events, and this will be a good lead-in. On Friday night, the flying club that we're associated with, Leading Edge Flying Club, we had our holiday dinner, and that was very cool. Thank you to a member that was a member of a very nice country club that made it available to us.
Yeah.
And it was great. We had, even with all the flu that's going around, we still had some 50-some people that showed up. And it worked out really, really nice. So that was great aviation. And then the next day, I happened to drive out to Elgin, which is about an hour drive from where I live, because Embry-Riddle was doing a research project on a NexRad training course. And if you attended, not only would you get to take this course at the FAA's funding, but you would receive $50 as one of their beta participants.
No kidding.
Yeah, and so, like I say, it's an hour, so I figure, well, I'm going to meet a whole bunch of new pilots. There was 20 people they allowed in there. 8 of them were from the flying club. We all drove the hour out.
Holy
there.
Cow, that's awesome.
I was like home. So anyway, between the two events, I arranged to do some flying this week, and I know my wife is listening, and so yes, sometime during this week, some evening, I am going up in the SR-22 to go practice some approaches up at Milwaukee or something like that.
Wait, let's back up real quick. So what you're telling me about this this beta testing NexRad seminar, was that the first $50 you made in aviation?
Actually, no. I have made money in aviation doing other things. Actually, going back to my college days, I was a line guy.
Well, what about you, for your pilot's license, just being a pilot? Was that the first?
Well, I'm not. I don't have a commercial rating, so no, I couldn't. Are you trying to trap me?
No, I'm not. I'm trying to congratulate you.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I have helped people manage airplanes, and I've done some things that are maybe made a few bucks. But I don't know if you want to put it that way. If that's going to float your boat, then
absolutely. That's a big celebration.
Yeah, float your boat or maybe fly your plane. I guess that'd be more appropriate to say it that way.
Yeah. Well, congratulations for making $50 in aviation this week.
Yeah, and I'm sure I spent it in gas on the way home.
That's all right. Hey, you learned a lot.
What are you doing this week in aviation?
I'm going to be in about 30 seconds here. I'm going to be laughing.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Well, are we going to do your this week before we do my make you laugh?
No.
Okay.
Because
is this because you just realized you forgot the Sunday night chuckle?
No, absolutely not.
We're on a carefully crafted flight plan here.
This is like a VFR flight tonight.
Yeah, right. Serpentine.
We're all over the place. Oh, well.
Well, you know, I was thinking... because I flew the airlines this week, instead of flying myself, I should do an airliner joke. And I happened to be listening into a door that was open mistakenly. I was up near the front of the airplane. I could hear the conversation between the pilot and the co-pilot. And I'll tell this as it happened because it really encompassed two different flights.
Yeah.
So... let's just say, and you know this because you've flown for the airlines, you guys swap legs, right?
Yeah.
So first officer's always in the right seat, but you get to land in the right seat.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
So after a particularly lousy landing made from the right seat of a commercial airliner, the FO, first officer, heard the captain announce, "Ladies and gentlemen," you know, I'll leave the name, let's say XXX Airlines, "wishes to apologize for that rough landing provided today by our first officer." He called him out. You know, the first FO was really pissed, right?
I would be too.
Yeah, and they didn't fly together for a long time. But then all of a sudden, several months later, guess what? The first officer finds himself flying with that same captain. And they were flying, and sure enough, now the captain's turn to land, right? It's his leg?
Yeah.
He bounces it. It's a worse landing.
Oh, man.
It's worse landing than the first officer did. So the first officer got this smug look on his face, and he jumped on the intercom and announced, "Ladies and gentlemen, XXX Airlines wishes to apologize for that rough landing today provided by our captain." The captain got pissed, right? He looked at the first officer. "What did you say that for?" And the first officer, of course, said, "Hey, remember a couple of months back when you did that to me? Now we're even." And then the captain really made him fail bad. He goes, yeah, but I never keyed the mic last time.
That is absolutely awesome. I love that.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. It is awesome. I used to, I think I told you about some of the announcements that I would make as a, we've called Kissing the Passengers Goodbye.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm glad that you guys had a little fun with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, there was, because it's, this is so appropriate for your joke this evening. When my announcements would always go when we were 15 minutes out from landing, they always went something like this. It was a standard hoopla at the beginning, which was said, well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, at one final time from the flight deck. This is the first officer speaking. We're about 15 minutes outside of the Chicago O'Hare International Airport. We'll be landing about 15 minutes and so on and so forth. And then I'd pause and I'd say, folks, you're in store for a retreat this evening, but I don't know if you know it or not, your captain, Mr. Mark Eppner, is at the controls this evening. And Mark has developed a reputation amongst the pilot group here at the airline as being one of the smoothest landers. And earlier in this flight, he said, quote, this will be the best landing ever, unquote. And Mark has better than ideal weather conditions for the smooth landing at the Chicago airport. Right now, the winds are gusting to 35 knots out of the southwest, 2 miles, heavy rain, and low overcast sky.
Nice. Put the pressure on the guy. What did your captain say after you did that?
Well, they would always, he didn't know, so I, you know.
Oh, he doesn't hear what you said.
Yeah, he can't hear what he says because he has to monitor the other radio while we're.
Oh, no kidding.
So when we land, people would always say, hey, this is awesome. And it was great. And even though it was a bad landing, it was, people still, the captain walked, kind of had a little swag getting off the airplane.
Nice, nice, nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always helping people. That's what I love about you.
helping their landing skills.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Well, to get back to your question real quick, we had to get laugh. I was getting a laugh craving.
I know, you get a little withdrawal and all that. We got to have that from time to time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, anyway, so this week, I'm actually excited. Tomorrow, I'm getting back in the King Air.
It's been a while. When's the last time you were in that plane?
Actually, I haven't flown it, believe it or not, in about a month.
You may not even be current anymore. Do you have to go out and do 3 bounces or something before they'll let you take a passenger?
Are you trying to get a ride?
Oh, my God. Would that be great? Yeah, absolutely. The FAA called. They only gave you 30-day currency.
Shoot. We got to get some type of waiver and get out there, huh?
Oh, my goodness. Would that be cool?
Yeah,
I want to ride in that plane bad.
Yeah, it would be a lot of fun. I would love to give rides. But I don't know if that can work out or not. But anyway, we're looking forward to a great show this evening with our guest, Jake Eating. He's going to be coming on tonight. And we were talking to him a little bit earlier before the show started. He's pretty pumped.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things. And for those that don't know Jake, which I suspect other than the people that are listening because of Jake may not, he's kind of in an enviable position for such a young man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll get him on the line here in just a minute. But first,
you're listening. Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Always got to get those in there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, we also have to, again, I want to throw in a plug for our friends here at Signature Flight Support as well.
Yeah.
And we should probably add that into our station ID, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, let's get Jake on the line here. He's I'm pretty excited for our listeners to hear him speak tonight. He's got a lot of passion for aviation. As you said, he's kind of in an enviable position. He's got a really exciting announcement to make this evening.
Well, I'm pretty excited to hear it then.
So absolutely.
On the line, Jake Eating. That must be his phone ringing.
Yeah.
One day they won't answer.
Hello?
He's answered.
Yeah.
Hey, Jake.
Right. How you doing?
Oh, did I miss the phone call?
No. I was afraid you would, but you got on.
No.
I was so engrossed in the show.
Oh, you're listening.
And then I realized I was listening to it in 20 minutes past time. I thought I'd made a terrible mistake.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. I made a party foul with your last name. It's Eating.
That's okay. I it was in the back of my head all day. It's like, oh, I bet I should probably tell them how to pronounce my name. And then I completely forgot until 2 seconds after you said it.
Oh, okay.
That's,
Well, that makes, and then it's, so it's spelled exactly as it sounds, because it goes EI. I was wondering where that was coming from, but I just trusted Ale.
Yeah, no, you would have been the first person to ever get it right the first time, so. No.
I love being the first person.
Oh man, I wish I could have
right.
won. I could have won a prize or something like that. But anyway, thanks for coming on, the show tonight. This is, should have a lot of fun, and, you got some really cool things going on.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to be here. I have my, my requisite, aviation beer, ready, and I'm ready to sit and talk. I always joke that I went flying this morning and my airplane runs on 7 gallons an hour and one beer an hour. So I always have to replenish my supply.
That's a good fuel flow.
Yeah. It's just be very careful about which order you do those in. But
yeah, right. Hey, you know what? Beer is probably cheaper than avgas too.
You're telling me. Yeah. My airport's still running $5.98 right now, which is crazy. I was looking around and gas was, this is like $4.50 some places.
Yeah, we have a $4.50 up, just west of Milwaukee and some $4.60s and all that, but if it makes you feel any better, Jake, I think, I gotta say the name because I like, they've done so well, but Signature here with Cook County taxes, aren't we still at 8 or above?
Something like that.
We might be above 8 still.
It's kind of
not complaining.
It's a wooden stake in the heart.
Yeah, it might be worth it, you guys, just to get a fuel truck, drive it over, bring your own fuel to the airport.
Yeah, exactly.
We have a guest in our audience that just held up a sign that says, "I'd love to pay $5.99."
Yeah.
Well, I got the airplane out of the hangar. I hadn't filled it up, and I taxied over to the pumps, and I got out, and I saw the price, and I knew it was a dollar or some less, like 10 miles away, and I hesitated for a second, and I said, "How lazy am I? Do I just want to get it here?" And I said, "Yes, I just want to get it here. I don't feel like landing at another airport and getting it there." So
yeah, but, you know what I did? You know, usually you can get a little discount between. Have you ever get self serve fuel?
Yeah, exclusively actually.
Yeah,
you know,
you can usually get a little discount if a place, it's like 10 or 20 cents discount
or more.
Yeah, or more of a discount for self-serve versus like full service. But this week we made a pledge when we went to Florida and back that we were going to get self-serve fuel. But after every flight, we were like, oh man, it's so nice. Nice to get a full service.
Yeah, when you've been strapped to an IO or a Lycoming 320 for like 4 hours, it's kind of nice just to make that call and have the gentleman in the truck take care of it for you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's get into kind of the meat and potatoes of this and all that. But give us a little glimpse of who you are and. We have this little conversation of a Cherokee 140 and all that. That's something pretty cool going on.
I spoiled it already.
No, you know that you certainly did.
You just
not.
We call that a segue.
Mention
an engine, and then we say, well, what airplane is attached to it, and why is it relevant? So yeah, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and who you are.
Yeah. So I'm my name's Jacob Eiding. Or Jake Eiding, if you prefer. I'm 25 years old.
Wow.
I've got my private pilot's license three years ago, 2009. So it'll be 3 years this fall.
Nice.
I did it like right after college. I was really into. It's actually a funny story. It's kind of a millennial path into getting into flight simulation, but. I started playing with Microsoft Flight Simulator
like
sometime.
The rest of us.
Yeah, in 2000, around in 2008, I got really into playing around, doing it really poorly and incorrectly. And then I did that for a year and a half, and I graduated college and I got a real job. And I had some savings left over, from college that I saved by getting good grades and going to a nice public school.
Nice.
So I was like, well, I could put this away and use it for a house or a new car. And I said, no, that's no fun. So yeah, I went out and got my private, like, right there. Would have been about, I guess it was right after I graduated college, so. Yeah, and I did that in like 3 months time. Which was, if anytime I talk to somebody, I try to, you know, stress on them, like, get the money first.
Yeah.
Like, find the time. And then just do it as, you know, in a blitz. I think I started in July and I took my check ride at the beginning of October. So, you know, I just was, you know, trying to get as many days as possible. And then the summer in Ohio, you get a lot of thunderstorms. And, my flight instructor, we didn't fly any sort of high tech. So if there was even a, you know, a forecast for possible isolated thunderstorms, it was a no go. So, you know, You had to work around that stuff, but I was still able to get it done fairly quickly. So then after that I moved out to California from Ohio, and I kind of quit flying for a while because it's really expensive.
So, no, really?
Yeah, yeah. I got out here, and I had the intention to go. I moved to the South Bay, so it's like near San Jose. And there's a couple little airports around there, and I kind of went and checked them out, but I just never got around to it. You know, I never got around to going out there and getting checked out and getting that all done. So I kind of sat on the ground for a year, which I guess in hindsight isn't that long at all to take a break, but,
it feels like an eternity though when you're going.
Yeah. Through. Yeah, it does. After that year, I decided I should start doing gliders because I had this thought that those would be cheaper.
And it is, isn't it?
Well, it is once you have a glider and you're in a club. But if you're renting the glider, so the place that I was trying to do it, I was renting the glider, which typically isn't how you do it. In most places in the country, you join the club, and then they don't actually charge you per hour for the glider rental because gliders are fairly cheap to maintain, since seeing as you don't have an engine. You just basically pay the rental for the tow plane and the tow pilot and then the instructor. But the place I was at charged per hour for the glider and something substantial, like $50 an hour or something.
Wow.
I don't know.
If you start having a good day in the glider, then you catch a good thermal.
Yeah.
And you're
saying,
hey, I'm going to stay up for 12 hours. That's it.
Yeah.
I can't get down and I can't afford to stay up.
These were 232s. So they're not like super good soaring gliders. I mean, they're pretty decent, but, they're mostly really heavy duty training gliders. And yeah, so I did that for a while. I was pretty close to soloing, and then I moved to San Francisco, which was made it a 2-hour drive to the glider port, and I said, meh, forget about it. And so I stopped flying for a while, and then this past summer I got the itch again, and went out and got my checkout and started flying up in Marin County, north of San Francisco, and it was a runaway downhill spiral. From there, I set out and I said, you know what, I remember this distinctly. I got my BFR, with this, nice instructor up at Petaluma, Oscar 69 in Marin County. And I said to him, I was like, you know, I kind of want to get back into flying. You know, I don't have a ton of money. You know, I want to, you know, be really conservative about it. And I'm like, you know, let's just set up and let's me and you do every 6 weeks. I'll just go up and we'll just fly around, just practice stuff, maybe work on a little IFR, but like I can only afford to do it like once a month, maybe. And then the next thing you know, I'm booking the 172 every weekend. So I got this tickle in my brain that said I have to get 100 hours in the next year. So that was my goal, and it still is my goal.
Nice.
So I had about 90 some hours when I started flying again, and so I want to get to 100 by like July of next year. And so I started scheduling a bunch of flights, right? Like you do. You know. Unfortunately, I found an FBO after I tried a couple different FBOs. After I left the original FBO I flew out of because there were parts duct taped onto the plane.
like the wings?
No, it was actually, in hindsight, I wouldn't have taken this bird up. but this was the first time I'd flown solo in like 3 years, and I wanted to take my wife up, and we got there, and the it was a 152, which I had plenty of hours in 152s, but the oil door on the cowl, the spring had busted off.
Whoa.
And then, and it, like somebody, you know, somebody was just being rough with it, and it's a 25-year-old airplane, so it just popped right off. The spring snapped. And, so they duct taped it down, and I get out there, and she goes, "Oh, we called a mechanic, he said it's fine."
And, as long as somebody else is going up in it.
And I was like, well, okay. And I, you know, went through my head, I was like, what's the worst that can happen? You
know, never say that in an airplane.
Well, you know, mine was like, well, I guess if it pops open, it's gonna sit sort of, you know, parallel to the windstream. I shouldn't see anything happen. It's, nothing should happen, right?
Right.
Well, anyway, I took it up, and it was a hot summer day, and by the time I got down, the thing was about off, because the duct tape had, like, melted in the sun.
Oh, jeez.
And, yeah, so, so that was my last time interacting with that FBO.
Yikes.
I found a new one, did online scheduling, blah, 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 all the nice stuff, started flying all the time, and then I started renting the airplanes. I wanted to do a little bit longer trips, right? As you do. So, you know, I eventually got tired of taking the airplane up for an hour, flying in circles and landing. I wanted to go for weekends, and I started booking the planes for weekends. I got checked out in their G1000 because they didn't have a daily minimum, and I was going to start taking it, and twice in a row I got bumped by a flight instructor. She calls up and goes, "Hey, I need that plane." And I said, but, and she's like, "You should take your name off the schedule." Okay.
Wow. All right. Wow. Customer service at its worst.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing was the FBO, she was not an employee of the FBO, but a sort of a customer of the FBO, right? as an instructor, and, you know, she's gotta make her living, and I understand that, and, you know, I wasn't gonna win this one, so.
Yeah.
I gracefully ceded the plane to her on several occasions, and I said, you know what, this is no fun. So actually, it started off in a real torqued off email to the FBO owner saying, blah, 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 I had this trip planned for 3 weeks. I get a call 3 days beforehand that I can't take the plane, blah, 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 blah. Could you please clarify? You know, I'm mad. And sort of as a threat slash whatever at the end, I go, by the way, do you know any Cherokees for sale? And he's like, in fact, I do. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm not mad anymore. Let's talk. So yeah, I got put in touch with a local guy who his family has grown out of his airplane.
Nice.
And, you know, he's got one kid and he had another kid on the way, and a Cherokee 140 is not really a big family airplane. So, you know, I called him up and he was super nice and was really excited that I was so young and thought I was awesome and was like, hey, I'll work with you. And I kind of almost walked away from the deal, just because I couldn't make it work. And he really stretched to make sure I got it. So I don't know why he was so adamant to get rid of the thing. I'm sure I'll find out.
Did you find any duct tape in the back?
There was no duct tape, as of yet. You know, it has, its quirks, but yeah, so I bought the plane, shortly thereafter.
25 years old and you bought an airplane.
Yeah, don't tell my parents. Actually, they know.
Yeah.
They were kind of hoping for a grandkid, not an airplane, but, you know, whatever.
Hey, that is a choice. Grandkid.
Yeah, there you go.
Wait, do they live in the area?
No, which makes it easier because they're 3,000 miles away, so it's a little bit easier to act on my own accord.
Yeah. So I got to ask about, so you found this plane and you ended up buying it. What were some of like the, you know, were you tossing and turning about the whole deal, or were you just like, oh man, I'm just going to do this?
Yeah, like, you know, it was like the triumph and tragedy of an airplane purchaser in like four acts. Because I called the guy up, you know, my mechanic slash FBO owner tipped me off, and I said, all right, well, I'll give the guy a call. I called him up, and he was like, yeah, it's great. It's a 1965. It's got a Garmin 430. It's got an autopilot. It's got an HSI. It's got a brand new carbon monoxide detector, rebuild exhausts, leather interior, blah, 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 blah. I put way too much money in this thing. So I was like, oh my god, this is great. It's like 1400 hours on the engine, 29.5. And I'm like, wow, 29.5. Like, I've been on Barnstormers a lot, and like, for, you know, $30,000 will get you a pretty nice little airplane, but it won't get you an airplane with a 430 in it. It won't get you an airplane with an autopilot. So I was like, wow, this is a really good deal. I was like, great, okay. I was like, I need to talk to a bank. I will call you back in 24 hours, hopefully with a loan authorization, and we'll get this done deal. Let's get it done this week or whatever. All right, so he's fine. So I go away and I go to the banks, and they're a little tighter with their money these days. So yeah. I hear. It's the first time I've ever gone to a bank for a favor. and I said, hey, hi, I'd like to be your customer. I have a decent job, I can afford this. And here's all my financials, and I would like a loan, please. And they basically laughed at me. And they said, what? No. we expect something like 10 years of credit history. And I was like, I was 15.
I was still running lemonade stands.
That's
come
right.
On.
Yeah. With great credit.
I don't think I had a bank account at the time. I have these magazine subscriptions. Will that count as credit history?
Yeah, right.
No, so they basically laughed me away, and I thought I had lost for sure. I thought, like, well, this is done. I don't have anybody to co-sign on this with me. I know I can't ask my parents, and I didn't want to because that's not something they should have to even think about. So I was like, well, I guess I lose. So I called the guy back, and I was like, yay, I really like the airplane, blah, 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 I can't do it. I tried, I can't do it, I lost. And he goes, yeah, you know what? Like, I don't really need the money right away. So, if you want, like, I'll just loan you the money. And nice. I was like, but?
My goodness.
Wow.
I was like, there must be something really wrong with this airplane.
Have you had an annual yet figure it out?
Well, I mean, you know, I probably would have walked away from the situation right there had I not had a mutual friend. I mean, basically my mechanic who I'd been renting from for several months, and, you know, I was aware he had a very good reputation, and he vouched for the guy. He'd been working on – he'd been maintaining this plane for 4 or 5 years. And so he, you know, had a referral. This guy is just going to, like – he's trying to screw me over some. Usually you don't lend somebody $30,000 to screw them over. So I was like, wow, okay. I don't know what's going on, but yeah, let's make it work. And so, yeah, we went and I got the thing annualed, and that was my first, I talked to the mechanic. I said, yeah, you know, what's this plane going to cost me? Like, what am I in store for? And, you know, the Cherokees, I think sort of the design philosophy behind the Cherokees was, let's make them cheap and let's make them simple.
Yeah.
Because they're like super low part count. Like, a lot of the parts in there are like parts from cars, you know, that Piper bought. And like, I don't know if you've ever opened up the left side on a Cherokee, but the canister for the brake fluid.
Yeah.
It's like a
tin.
Yeah, a little black, like a flask.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something that would hold lighter fluid or something like that. the designers were like, well, okay, we can make a custom thing, or you can buy these for 10 cents, you know, if you buy them in bulk. So they're like, fine, strap it to the bulkhead, we're done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the whole plane is like that. So, you know, that's basically what my mechanic said. He was like, you know, these things are super, super cheap. And I was like, okay, great. I was like, okay, well, you know, and then we got into pre-purchase, and I was like, okay, you know, I said, I'll pay for the inspection. So he was like, the annual was due in, like, December or January, and it was, like, early November. So he was like, hey, why don't you just do an annual and as the pre-buy, and then you have it good for a year. And I was like, okay, this sounds sure. And I was like, how much is it going to cost you? Oh, you know, $1,500, ha, ha, ha. No. So, you know, had that done, and my first moment as an airplane owner was seeing that the annual ended up costing something like $3,700 instead of $15. And,
oh my goodness.
that was, that was sort of my first moment of, oh, what am I doing?
Welcome to the dark side.
So when did you get the plane?
I signed it over in the beginning of November, actually.
Like 2 months ago, November?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god,
that's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to keep using that word because it is awesome.
It is. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine at 25 even thinking of buying an airplane. That's really cool.
That's why I'm insane.
I got to ask a question for the people that are listening right now, and to post their responses on Twitter with the hashtag SimpleFlight. But if you were a 25-year-old, what kind of airplane would you buy? So, if you can,
I think the answer will be, what can I afford?
Yeah,
you can't say I want to buy a Citation 10 or anything like that because unless you can afford it. So let's put that caveat around the question we're asking.
Yeah, okay, all right. So something that realistically you would buy.
Yeah, it may be a little bit of a stretch.
You know what I was actually looking at, or at one of my goals was, which was to own an airplane while I was still in college, and I always wanted a Cessna 150 Aerobat.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been gnarly.
That's cool. Yeah, no, it's funny, even as passionate as I was about flying way back then, I did not think about owning one. To me, and again, this goes back to mid-70s, it was wouldn't have been feasible.
So, yeah.
As far as I was concerned, people don't buy airplanes, they just rent them.
Yeah.
I was in a unique position that I, you know, software engineers have it pretty good as far as things go. And, you know, I certainly am not making, you know, the most conservative path would have been not to buy an airplane. and I can't recommend it for everyone. But, you know, if you're into aviation, if you're my age or, you know, if you're under, everybody thinks like, oh, we gotta, you know, turn 20, turn 30, get married, you pump out a bunch of kids, you get those kids out of your house, and then when the kids are out of your house and you stop having to pay for them, then you can finally save up your money and go out and buy your airplane when you're 50 or 60 or, you know, whatever. And, you know, that's one way to do it, but you don't have to do it that way, you know, like, you know, And you know, if you think about it right and you pick a cheap airplane or you find a partner, I'm still looking for a partner. So anybody, if anybody wants, you know, I can bear I'm bearing the brunt of this thing just fine. But, you know, it sits there usually one day on the weekend that somebody else could gladly be flying around.
If anybody wants to be Jake's partner, send a tweet. We'll find you a partner.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, Jake, you're saying you fly it one day a week or you fly it 6 days a week? I wasn't sure when you said one day a weekend it's available.
I only usually get to fly on the weekend, so it usually is, you know, sometimes I fly 2 days a week, Saturday and Sunday, but a lot of times I'm just out there one day. So, you know, if you think about it, I fly the thing, you know, maybe 4 hours a week. There's a whole bunch of other time it could be getting used, but.
Yeah, that's still a healthy amount.
4 hours
yeah.
a week?
Yeah, that's still, I well, think that's pretty that's impressive.
That's close to 200 hours a year, right?
Yeah.
That's sort of, how much hours did I get this weekend? I did 1.8 yesterday and 1.2 today, so not that many. Maybe like three hours.
So, but that's still well over that 100 hour mark, which is what I have always heard, and I just took it as truth that if you fly 100 hours a year, that you should look into buying an airplane.
Yeah. We have a flood of tweets came in. People were, you know, people were mentioning that they would like a Mooney. What kind of Mooney would be a good entry level Mooney to get into?
Are you asking me?
Both of us, but Jake and you. I think it was an old M20 or 201 or something like that.
M20 or what's another popular? Wasn't there a J model that was always very popular? I think a Mooney's a great airplane for
that would
plus speed, you know, performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was there was a guy up at Napa, the airport I fly out of, selling it was like a 60s or 70s Mooney.
Really?
Pretty low time for 35 or something like that.
Yeah.
And like that's something, I mean, really like a young professional pilot can, or not professional pilot, but a young, you know, somebody with a job
Yeah.
To definitely split with somebody else, like, you know, you get a couple of people to go in on that. And that's a trip-taking airplane.
Those
Unis are.
Yeah, we're
actually,
go ahead, Mooney, Jake, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, I was on, parallel approaches with the Mooney today, into Napa. One of us had our gear down when we landed.
Ooh.
It was me.
Well, one of you had your gear down, so the other guy did not.
No, yeah, as soon as I touched down on, I've been 1-8 right, he was landing 1-8 left, and, you know, I didn't quite see it, I was pretty focused on getting down, and, you know, he comes on the frequency just like a second later, well, that was stupid.
Oh!
And I was just like, well, what happened? And, yeah, sure enough, I taxi on by, and I'm looking down the runway as I'm crossing, and I should be able to see more of that Mooney from this distance.
Ooh.
It's definitely not all the way up where it should be, and yeah, they had to call out the county trucks and stuff, and I was just like, wow, you know, man, that stuff can happen. That's why I think today I made the decision to never own a retractable gear airplane.
Don't limit yourself. I know the saying is something that there's those that have landed gear up and those that will, but you know, as long as you keep your procedures in there, I think your odds are pretty good.
Yeah, so prop forward 3 green. Every single time, it'll save you.
But, you know, though, I will say that sometimes when I do some of that stuff, it becomes rote where I'm just saying it. Do I really see the 3 green? That's my fear.
Right, yeah.
I even told my wife, when we were in an aero once, I said, okay, your job is to make sure when I land, those 3 green lights are on.
Yeah.
She took it very seriously.
Hey, that's a good thing though.
Yeah.
Hey, we actually have a bunch of other airplanes, mentioned. So what do you think, what do you think some popular planes would be?
Well,
for entry level ownership.
For entry level, you're gonna come up with the 172s, the 182s possibly.
Yeah.
Archers, Warriors.
Yeah. A lot of people actually responded to, Jake, they're envious of the Cherokee 140. Actually, there was somebody was sent a text message asking, you have like an hourly operating cost for your airplane?
Yeah, basically I take all the money I have and I divide it by the number of hours I fly. And that's the hourly operating cost. Now, it's only for me.
Yeah.
And the way I run my finances is such, I mean, so a lot of people will say like, okay, you know, I know I've got a 15 or 20 grand overhaul coming up at, you know, in 1,000 hours or 600 hours. So take that amount and divide that up and then add that to my hourly rate and then put it away in a cookie jar. You know, and I'm probably just lazy in that I don't want to have to think about moving money around every time I take the airplane out for a spin.
Yeah.
But, you know, I probably run, you know, gas-wise, I probably run $45 to $60 an hour in gas, depending on what I'm doing. You know, today I was just bored. You know, my wife was working this morning, so I was like, I'm just going to at the airport, and I'm just going to fly around. So I just got up, got about, you know, 1,500 AGL, put it down to maybe like 100 miles per hour, 90 miles per hour, got it all leaned out and slowed up, and I was burning like 5.5-6 gallons per hour.
Nice.
So like,
that's pretty,
you know,
sexy.
Just to fly, you know, if you just want to fly, you can do it really cheaply, but I don't know, it's probably somewhere between $60,000 and $6,000 an hour, depending on what trouble I get into.
Is that 150 horse, right?
It's 150 horse, but it's got the Ram STC in it, so it's got a little more power, this up supposedly. You know, I've never flown a 150 horse. I don't know if you can feel the difference between 150 and 160, but supposedly I have a 150 horse engine.
Yeah, we'll go with that then.
Yeah.
Here's another Twitter question came through, and there somebody I may have missed it when we first started, but where are you from?
Originally I'm from West Central Ohio.
Nice.
Yeah, I think the question we're getting here, because I think you said you were going to find you a partner, I'm getting here is, where's Jake based?
Yeah.
Right now I'm in San Francisco is where I sleep. My airplane is in Napa, which if anybody Google Maps that, it's not the best commute right now. It's about an hour this way to get to my airplane and back, so.
Wow.
Yeah, but you get to drink on the way back.
Yeah. So I'd love to move it closer right now. But my as part of my deal, when I bought the airplane, the current owner he's in the process of buying a 210. Which that would be a great upgrade airplane if we want to talk about second airplanes, but
that's one of my favorite airplanes, a 210.
He's looking for a 210 right now, and he didn't want to lose his hangar, so he's like, well, you know, if you just want to, like, keep using the hangar, I won't charge you for it, and just make it, you know, make sure they know it's lived in, and I don't lose my spot. And I was like, okay, no problem.
Well, so you met a really nice guy, right, that not only had the resources and the faculty, but the ability to help you out, but a nice man that saw the future of aviation. And that encourages me.
Yeah, no, it's something he said to me specifically, was like, you know, I reminded him of himself, you know, 10 years earlier.
Awesome.
And, that he kind of felt that I kind of felt like a charity case, but I was like, well, in this case, I don't care. but you know, he said, you know, he's kind of paying it forward, and you know, I owe him infinite beers. But yeah, I got a shout out. His name's Alex, and
hey, that's a good name.
Just been awesome. Yeah,
I'm looking at two Alexes right here in the studio.
Yeah,
it's a good aviation name.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh my goodness, that's great. I'm like I say, I'm beaming here because there's people. That's what I want to see. You know, I've always been taught in your phases of life, there's learn, earn, and return. And I'd love to be able to do that someday for someone like yourself.
Yeah.
I would love to, you know, thing I got this airplane now, if I, you know, in 10 years, if I'm still flying it, I don't want to sell it. I would love to just keep it around and teach people to fly with the thing, you know? It's a great teaching airplane.
Absolutely.
I've got to get my CFI and maybe install passenger side brakes, but besides that, it's good to go.
That's teaching.
Cool. Actually, a little known fact, maybe among the people in this room, is that when I started flying my lessons the first time around, it was in a Cherokee 140.
Oh, yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah. Matter of fact, when I started, I don't think the Warriors and Archers were out. You know, certainly the Archer was probably called the 180. We talked about this earlier, the 235 or the Charger, which became the Dakota. But I worked at a Piper dealer, and they did bring in the Warriors, I'm pretty sure, when they came out. But up until then, we were flying 140. Actually, now I have a motivation when I get home tonight to look up that tail number. I want to see where it's at.
Yeah.
It's probably the one that Jake just bought.
Probably.
Yeah. Maybe not.
I love how airplanes float around like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one of my favorite parts of buying the plane was before I signed anything, Alex dropped me a big box of paperwork, and he's like, "Here you go." And getting to look through the logs. I have all the original maintenance of the logs going back to 1965. And just to like go through and look at all the people that the airplane has gone through and the different like phases of its life and stories and stuff, you can really get like caught up in like the sort of the narrative of the airplane.
Yeah.
And you know, my airplane was fortunate only used for training for about 2 years before it was bought by a couple and basically sat in a hangar for a long time, getting flown about 15 hours a year. And then, you know, Alex bought it a few years, I mean, 5 or 6 years ago, and he's been burning 100 hours on it for the past couple of years. So now this plane is getting new life, 40 some years after it rolled off the factory. And, yeah, it's a great plane though. I would have to say, like, you know, if people are looking at first planes, like, definitely look for something, definitely think about the long-term costs as well as the initial buy costs, like, you not just want to look at, don't just look at, oh, it's 19,000. You got the biggest thing is engine. You want to make sure the engine's got time on it. At least you know how much is burnt off of the engine.
Yeah. Right.
That's something you really want to learn about. I can recommend a book.
Please do.
And I'm going to have to Google it to get the, It's just Airplane Ownership is the title. It's written by Ron Wantaya. It's Ronald Wantaja. That's probably the hardest name to spell ever. but I picked this book up a few years ago at a used bookstore, and it sat on my shelf untouched for a couple years, and I picked it up this summer before I had even thought about buying a plane seriously. And I read it cover to cover, and he does a really good job of sort of like warning you and sort of like explaining the pitfalls and sort of like some of the tricks for cheap flying as well. He talks about, you know, he was not much older than me, the author of this book, when he bought his first plane, which was a Cessna 152.
Nice.
For, you know, less than $20,000. And he flew that. You know, it depends on your mission, right? Like, if you just want to fly, if your primary mission is getting off the ground, like, you can do it for you know, not much more than almost everything you own. So, like, you know, that's a, you know, when I shared this story with people and my peers, and I go, yeah, I bought an airplane. And the inevitable head turn, what? You bought an airplane? And everybody's, you know, the first thing they want to ask is like, how did you afford that? Or how much did that cost? And, you know, everybody's almost unanimously, everyone is surprised when I go, oh, it was less than $30,000, you know, I all own on it, whatever. And they go, what? Like, I've looked at cars that cost that much.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, the problem is people look at the new price tag, or they look at the price tag for like, the sexiest, you know, a nice tricked out 172 or a new LSA, and they're all in the $70,000 to $300,000 range. And you know, if you're there's nothing wrong with these 40-year-old airplanes, these 40-year-old slow, weak airplanes. They still fly.
Yeah.
They fly just fine. So yeah. Airplanes.
Absolutely. No, I think that's really outstanding. There's a There's an old saying, right? The cheapest thing with an airplane is when you buy it. And then, you know, you keep, the maintenance costs keep going on. You know, I often fantasize and looking at controller.com at citations and like, saber liners and stuff like
that.
Like, hey man, I could really pick one of these things up for $100,000. And it'd be like, but then that would be just a serious disaster.
Well, you know where I'm going to go with my next question, because I'm an old married man. You haven't said much about your wife here, and what was her reaction, and what continues to be her reaction?
I have to thank her for being the most supportive person in the entire interaction by far. But you know, she has kind of not learned, but kind of come to grips that when I have my eye set on something, that there's not a whole lot she can do to get in the way of it,
including you picking a spouse.
Yeah, right. I mean that in a good way. And she loves flying. She doesn't like fear it or anything. And she's expressed some interest in learning to fly someday when she has time. And now we have a plane that she can do it in, which is great. Yeah. She was really supportive, and she, you know, she was mostly just concerned about, like, you know, we're not going to go broke, are we, right?
Well, not today.
I said, well, maybe. But hopefully not. Hopefully not.
Possibly.
You know, it's the best mistake I've ever made by far. So.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
That's
awesome. You know, in this day and age, and Al and I are very focused on growing aviation as best we can from behind the mic and outside it with the airplane. And this is, like, gratifying. For me, I'm sure for you too.
Oh,
absolutely. To hear someone age 25 that has the same passion that all of us does and says, I'm going to go out and buy an airplane.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and, you know, more and more people are coming out of the woodwork in my age bracket, you know, wanting to explore aviation as a hobby, or more so. Mostly as a hobby. I have one friend who's currently, he just soloed actually a couple days ago.
Nice. Congratulations to him.
Yeah. similar story to myself. His name's Alex, actually, too.
Kind no of. Way! Oh, wow! Like, this is, I get out of town. This is a fantasy it's a, night.
It's Alexi, actually, but you can call him Alex for short.
I'm changing my name.
He was similar story to me. He just got out of college, and he actually went to UC Davis, which is an awesome school to learn to fly out of, because they have a little aviation program and a little wonderful little airport there, and like some of the cheapest rental slash instructor costs in the country, like $25 or $30 an hour for the instructors, and like
nice.
Like $80 an hour for a 152, like just crazy cheap.
That is cheap.
So if anybody's listening in Davis, California, you have no excuse. Go fly now.
Vamanos.
But yeah, but he just soloed, and I had two new friends, two new people I just met the other day who saw my blog post and were like, I you know, you've convinced me I'm gonna go do this. And it convinces me that I think people still want to do this, and people are still willing, even though the costs are exorbitant, and it really does cost almost everything you own. Like, I don't think there's, you know, everybody talks about there's this decline, right? Like, year over year, we're getting less and less pilots, more and more, you know, dying off, and we're not creating new ones. And I really don't think it's that people don't want to do it anymore. I just think people don't realize they can do it anymore.
Right.
And
that's huge.
And a big piece of it is just getting it out in people's faces and being like, you know, I only speak to the United States, but so many people are, when I say like, you know, yeah, I fly around, and they're like, what, you can just get in and just go places? Like, you can just get in and fly? You know, most people's interaction with aviation is through what? The airlines, right?
Right.
It's through this
it's
giant mechanical, like, shame machine, right? Or what did I call it? I don't know, but it's the collective spanking machine of the TSA that you have to go through every time you fly. And it's this interaction with this massive, highly regulated environment, you know, where everyone's a professional, the pilots are professionals, it seems very regimented. And then I jump in my little lawnmower with wings, and I'm just like, yeah, I just flew over there. And they're like, don't you have to call anybody or tell anybody anything? And they're like, no, I just go.
Yeah,
you know,
and when I get to the other end, they give me a free car.
Exactly.
And I think people don't kind of really realize, at least, you know, how free the airspace is, at least in the United States, like how we still have, and hopefully for a long time to come, access to all this unused airspace in between, you know, metropolitan areas. And like they just don't realize that that's not necessarily a right or an entitlement, but sort of a, I don't know, what's like not a right, but a privilege. That's what I'm looking
for. Yeah.
It's sort of a privilege we have in this country, and that, you know, get on it, use it.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, we have all this, we have this massive infrastructure, and it's, you know, nothing for a little more for having good you know, having a great way to travel and have fun, really.
Absolutely.
You know, like how many other federal systems are out there that are basically around for, you know,
for your convenience.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, not necessarily, and that's not true. I mean, aviation has lots of, you know, general aviation specifically has lots of business purposes and very practical business purposes too, but, you know, it also serves as a great place just to have a lot of fun. And yeah, it's interesting. And I think it all just comes down to, like, you know, aviation has a marketing issue, you know, has a marketing problem, and, you know,
yeah, I think that's part of it. I have talked to Al before about, I was commiserating essentially with a guy I was working with, and he is into his cars. He loves Thunderbirds, T-Birds we used to call them. I don't think they make the car anymore, but he just collects them. And I was talking about the declining pilot population, and he said, well, the same thing, the kids today, you know, those kids today.
Yeah.
aren't into cars. With us, it was always, oh, gotta get the GOAT, the GTO,
yeah,
all this, and now they want neons and souls and inexpensive little,
yeah,
cars. And so we kind of came to the conclusion, which is different than you're saying, that, you know, people just aren't into this and have no desire. But what I'm hearing you say, which is kind of uplifting, is, yeah, there is a lot of people, they just gotta know about it more.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, it's funny, I was mentioning the car thing, I was talking to my wife the other day about that, how my dad's generation, your car was your avatar, right? Your car was your, that was your outward facing, like, that was what you, I mean, we have the internet to, like, represent ourselves, right? Like, I have my Facebook page and my website and my web presence. That's my me telling the world who I am and how I carry myself. You know, 30 years ago, it was your car, right? Like, that was what people saw when you went outside your house.
Absolutely. I identify.
I know somebody recently who was showing pictures of themselves driving a Corvette around and all that, and all that.
is his name Alex?
Yeah, his name was Alex.
And that was after he got out of his Porsche?
Yeah, something like that, I don't know. But yeah, no, you're right. That's actually an interesting point. Like,
it is very interesting.
That is, that's pretty cool because like your avatar back then was your car, you know, with curb feelers and chrome rims and everything like that. Now it's, you know, your online presence and, you know, aviation was certainly, it certainly had that back at, you know, probably back in the day amongst the aviation community.
Yeah, and you had this like ecosystem where, you know, you opened up a men's magazine or whatever, mass media, and you'd have a full page Cessna ad, right? Because Cessna had an actual incentive to be advertising to the middle class because brand new airplanes were something that was, you know, purchasable, right? Like, so not only did you have these massive companies making airplanes, which to some degree they still do, but you don't have them mass marketing like they used to do. Like, so you don't have, you know, the airplane that somebody in the middle class can afford now is a 1965 Piper Cherokee 140, but there's no marketing budget for 1965 Cherokee 140s, right? So you're not going to end up with ads on YouTube. You're not going to end up with ads on Facebook for buy a 1965 Piper Cherokee, right?
Right.
So I think that's a big piece of why, like, it's out of the conversation now as well.
Yeah,
of course.
Hey, I got to go back to one thing real quick about the infrastructure that you were talking about, Jake. It's something just like I just had a aha moment here, and it was exactly. So, you know, you said that this infrastructure is really, really nice, and it's convenient and it's fun and all that, and I don't think a lot of people understand how to use it. And you know, so I just recently did kind of two longer cross country training flight/adventures, and went out to Phoenix and went out to this last week in Florida, and one thing that I kept on stressing, and I found myself stressing a lot, was, hey, you got to understand, you know, how to use aviation and what it's supposed to feel like. And if you start feeling stressed out and while traveling in general aviation, you're doing it wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it was like, hey, you can set your own schedule. You have a crew, you know, a crew car. You have these FBOs that just kind of take care of you and everything like that. It takes time to kind of learn all that, and you know, that's all really important and really fun.
Yeah, I mean that's you know, that being stressed out takes away the fun of it, and that's something I've discussed with my peers who are pilots who rent. They say, you know, you take the airplane out for an afternoon and you can't enjoy your lunch because you're always looking at your watch, right?
Yeah.
Or you know, you might say, hey, let's head down here today. Well, the forecast looking marginal. I'm VFR. You know, I know we'll be able to get in, but who knows when the marine layer is going to come in. You know, and with a rental airplane, that's a real stressful situation to be in because you don't want to get there and then you're stuck. And then the rental, the FBO is mad because you got their airplane stuck. You're mad because you're now stuck. You know, with an airplane you own, you know, I'll just go, you know, if the off chance that the weather closes in on me, the marine layer comes in an hour early, oh well, I'll find a hotel, I'll spend the night, and I'll fly my airplane back in the morning.
Yeah.
It's much more relaxing. And I think, I don't know how your guys' like flying club operates, but like, I would hope that flying clubs are a little more relaxed about that kind of situation. Cause I know FBOs are real, I mean, you have so many people scheduling airplanes and stuff, they're really, you know, you don't want to not bring the airplane back because then you're ruining somebody else's day too. And that's one of the big reasons I did go out and buy, because I just wanted to be able to fly someplace, not have to think about anything else, enjoy myself, and come home when I'm ready.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's safer too. You know, if you take out that external pressure of having to be someplace on some time.
Yeah.
Suddenly you're making much more reasonable decisions than if you're in a rush or you have some external pressure to get this equipment back.
To answer your question real quick, I know Alec wants to say something, but the club, because of the main thing you mentioned, safety, we never want anyone to hurry back if it's not safe. We'll figure it out. Matter of fact, I can think of several times we flew instrument pilots out to them to help them get back.
Oh, you know, that's awesome.
Yeah, so yeah, we violently agree.
Yeah.
That's something in FBO that just rents will probably never do because, you know, it's not a cooperative like a club is. It's a business, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Going back to that, like the pressure of getting the plane back and everything, I've run into a couple times where, club members have called me up and said, oh my goodness, I'm stuck down in St. Louis or I'm stuck up in, Madison and you've got the airplane and I'm so sorry, but I really don't feel comfortable going and all this. And, you know what? I think people in the club are pretty relaxed and easygoing about it. And they just kind of, you know, it doesn't really matter. I always comfort the person, say, hey, you know what? You're making a great decision. And, you know, the key to aviation is flexibility. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And the key to being a longtime aviator is making those conservative choices in a lot of cases.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, flying clubs, that's a whole, I mean, I think you guys had Adam Smith on here a couple weeks ago. And that's one of his big pillars, right? Is, trying to get flying clubs to be a thing, a more, you know, prevalent thing in this country.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that would be great. Like I might not be owning an airplane right now if I had found a decent little flying club to join up with. But, you know, oh well.
Well, hey, maybe it's time to start one.
I was just going to say.
You could have your plane fly more. That's your partner right there, a club.
There we go. Start a club.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, like Al said, you get your partners and together you share the financial support. But what we found, the key word support, it's not just financial, it's emotional, physical. There's so much more. And we support, I'll use that word again, Adam's push and believe in the flying club because we've just seen it here firsthand. As a matter of fact, if someone wants to use a plane, we used to do this, we'd have owners that would want to take their airplane for long weekends and people would want to rent it. We'd say, hey, why don't we fly up with you? Then we'll bring your plane back and we'll rent it out and you'll make some money. And when it's time to come home, we'll fly up there again and you can fly back.
Yeah.
You know? So there's just things that the flying club community does. And I think community is the proper word. It's family.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that support structure is something I think that gets missed, especially like, you know, I don't know, I live in a very like, San Francisco, there's a lot of transplants here. So people aren't as connected necessarily to the community. Most of us are either engineers or whatever that we came out here for work. And so we aren't necessarily as tied to the local community. There isn't really as much a semblance of like a local community. So like, it's a little bit harder to get those connections and like flying clubs could really bridge the gap for that. And there is, I mean, I don't know if you ever heard of West Valley Flying Club.
Yeah, absolutely. I have.
Yeah, it's probably the biggest flying club in the country or close to it. I would have to imagine they have something like 100 planes or something crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one of the big, and I almost joined, West Valley Flying Club, but, I ended up not, good story. But yeah, so
yeah, no, that is a really good story. You know what? I think that going back to your point about being, you know, San Francisco being kind of like a transplant city, you know, a flying club, in my opinion, you know, would be like the perfect thing for there, you know, and Jake, I think you tend to agree with that, is that, hey, it'd be a great way for people to just get out to an airport and just, you know, and if they're there, everything will kind of take care of itself, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's just exposure.
Just start talking and stuff like that.
So when you're ready to start awesome. Leading Edge Flying Club West, we'll help you.
I'm ready to call.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, step zero is to get an airport that's like, you know, within 20 miles of the downtown because, they're all gone.
Oh man.
San Carlos is the closest and that's like 25 miles from downtown and in bad traffic. It's 30 or 40 minutes. And,
sounds like you need a helicopter rating.
Yeah. Well, the thing, if you, San Francisco, I mean, has been a military town for forever and there were actually two airstrips in the, like, down, I mean, very much like Meigs Field, like, it was a, you know, very central little general aviation airport. It lied on the, it was on the north coast of San Francisco, yeah. Sort of like right inside Bay Bridge. There was, Crissy Field, and I believe the other one was called Marin Field, or not Marin Field, Marina Field, or something like that. Marina Field has been closed for decades, but, Crissy Field was actually a paved runway, general aviation Class E airport until, sometime in the late 80s. I know, like, Reagan landed there.
Wow.
They could get Learjets in there. It was something like 24, 25. They tore it up in the, you know, as many of these airports did, they tore it up in the 90s because, you know, they wanted a park. I always joke that the environmentalists got the ultimate win because they convinced the city to put in a wetland instead of an airport. And you just gotta shake your fists at, you know, those dastardly people because once you put in a wetland, you can never get rid of a wetland. that's gonna be a wetland forever.
Yeah.
And,
Friend Alex will give you the money to build an airport.
you know, in my, you know, money rich fantasies where I have my Citation jet, that's the first thing I'm gonna do is buy that land back and put in an airport. Or another thought I had was building an aircraft carrier and parking it in the middle of the bay.
Oh my god, how cool would that be? And then you could teach people to land on the air track.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. How long is an aircraft carrier? It's long enough for a Cherokee, I'm pretty sure.
For an F-14.
Yeah. If you got it going 100 knots into the wind, it's good enough pretty much for anything.
I have to, Jake, when you were talking about that, I absolutely have a fantasy that would be making enough money with these bazillion dollars that you get on these lotteries or whatever, and in the middle of the night, rebuild Meigs Field.
Yeah, let's do it.
He wakes up in the morning, there's an airport there.
Actually, yesterday I was...
There was equipment that could build an airport as fast as equipment that can destroy one, you know?
Exactly.
I was actually flying downtown yesterday. I took some people on a little scenic flight around downtown. We did like two or three turns around a point around Meigs Field. And yeah, they still have the little control tower up there.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Yeah, I go by it all the time and it makes me nauseous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jake, you know, we have heard from you a couple times that you're in the technology engineer. But you in your, I don't know if it's your paid life, but in the other stuff you with technology, I understand that you have a connection to aviation there as well.
Yeah, I'm slowly, sort of doing, you know, as with anything, you find yourself being passionate about, you know, it tends every aspect of your life begins to drift that way, if you let it. this past December, I had an itch and I scratched it with some software. I don't know if you guys are big 4Flight users or...
Yes,
we are.
I'm a huge 4Flight fanatic, and if anybody from 4Flight's listening, I love you. but their software is really, in my book, bar none. I use it all the time, and I just actually bought an iPad mini, and I got a RAM mount in my iPad, or in my Cherokee now, and I've got, I bought a Stratus the other day, actually.
Nice.
So, like, I've got the whole hookup now.
He can't afford an airplane, he tells us, and he's buying all the stuff for the airplane.
Hold on. In a prisoner exchange with my wife, I was allowed to buy the Stratus. I'll explain later how I was able to maneuver that one. But, I like to use the iPad. I wanted to get rid of paper charts because they're silly and they're bulky and they're obnoxious and they cost a lot of money to keep updating and yada yada yada. All the things like my paper charts.
Environmentally unfriendly.
Yeah, and the trees. But I wanted to use it specifically in the cockpit. I've been using it for flight training or for like pre-flighting for years. And so I do a lot of flight simming still because that's how I got into aviation originally. There's no real good way to use the ForeFlight like as if you were in the simulator. ForeFlight announced like a few weeks ago or a few months ago, they added integration so that you could be flying an X-plane and you can connect your ForeFlight app up to X-plane and it would basically act as if it were in your simulated airplane.
Nice.
And yeah, I mean, that sounds kind of, oh, cool, whatever, neat. But when you think about it, really, like, that's an incredible training tool because now you're taking this, and ForeFlight, like, as awesome and simple as I think it is to use, it's still an incredibly complicated piece of software. And, like, with anything incredibly complicated, you're best to sort it out when you're on the ground in your chair at the safety of your desk rather than in a, you know, piece of aluminum going 120 miles an hour.
Yeah, right.
If ForeFlight recognizes this and they added the integration for X-Plane, unfortunately, my simulator of choice is still Flight Simulator 10, FSX, and it's been stopped being supported years ago by Microsoft because they just don't make money off it anymore and they haven't supported it.
Right.
So there was no way to do this and you know, ForeFlight being a Mac house, they wanted to use X-Plane because they can, you know, do testing and stuff. So I was like, well, surely the protocols that they use to talk to X-Plane, I can mimic those and ForeFlight won't know the difference, right? So I set out and I said, well, I'm gonna write an app to send my FSX position to ForeFlight. And I sat down and I got all really really MacGyver about it, and I sniffed the protocols, and I like reverse engineered it, and I figured out what they were sending, and then I started sending it, and I got it all working, and then I was like, hey, you know what? I bet other people would like to use this. And I was like, I've always wanted to write like an FSX add-on, so I packaged it up, and I called it, I got an icon for $2 off a stock art site.
Nice.
And it's now called an FSX flight, so you can now, and I sell it for $5. Which is a steal.
I tell you what, that's the best $5 you'll ever spend because I gotta say I'm pretty impressed with that software that you developed and I use it all the time with
awesome.
Did you pay the five bucks? Yeah, I certainly did. I did. I think I even bought it twice maybe.
I'm not gonna stop you. Yeah, buy it right. Three times if you
cha-ching,
want.
Cha-ching. No, but seriously, I gotta compliment you on, because that is, it's such an incredible training tool. And, Keith Smith, from Pilot Edge, you know, he's got the air traffic control, simulator that goes into X-Plane and flight simulator and all that. But so I was thinking, I'm like, okay, that'd be a great pinch hitter course, right? But then actually the thing I got to tell you, Jake, that, you know, I've been kind of tossing this idea of doing like a pinch hitter scenario with somebody using that. And then now it's such a sell to these, you know, these spouses and whatnot of pilots, showing them that, hey, you know, to have a mock scenario and everything, but have an iPad connected to a flight simulator, you know, while somebody, you know, a virtual air traffic controller is talking them down. I tell you what, that software that you developed is very valuable in that regard.
Well, and I've seen you use it not just with pinch hitter, you use it with students.
Yes, yeah, students and learning, believe me, trying to teach somebody how to learn to fly IFR with an iPad is pretty, it's a very difficult thing, you know, trying to flip through charts and things like that. It's so, it builds up your endurance, I guess, and tolerance and everything. You kind of see how long, here's another thing, you see how long your iPad battery lasts, you know, when you have it.
These are all sort of dress rehearsal things that, like, if you tried to convince a pilot, like, hey, why don't you, sit down and pretend to use your iPad like you're in the cockpit for an hour and a half, they're going to go, no, that's stupid.
Yeah.
But you put the simulator in front of them and say, hey, you're flying. You're the game. This is a real deal. Treat it like the real thing. Suddenly, like, you go, oh, and you start to encounter all these, like, issues. Like, how am I going to hold this thing? Like, how, you know, like, you know, what view do I want to be looking at? How quickly can I pull up this weather information? And the great thing is, too, like, you know, you can be connected to a Wi-Fi and use it as your weather source. If you have some sort of, you have ADS-B weather for your iPad, you can still use that on, you know, on the ground in some effect. And,
yeah.
And that just makes me shine when I hear that it's getting used with students, because that's, I mean, I built it for me as a student. I wanted to increase my, you know, one thing was IFR training with it. I don't want to, when I start IFR training, I don't want to be using paper charts again. So
right.
I want it for that. And just for VFR flying, being able to have it and know how to use the sectionals on it really quickly and know how to get around quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I needed this, and I'm just pleased that, you know, so many people have found it useful. And the response has been great. It actually bought me the Stratus. That's how I was, to say
nice.
I was able to justify
that. Oh, there it is. That's cool. Yeah.
That's a lot of sales. I love
it. It is. Yeah, that's exciting. Congratulations. Yep.
Better than I had ever expected. It was mostly an experiment, but now I'm kind of convinced that, hey, I can make things that are useful to people, and, you know, people will pay me for it, and that's something that, you know, that's a good feeling.
I have some ideas we can talk about offline as well.
So what is the name of, I'm gonna ask another Twitter question for everybody. I'm wondering how many people have used Jake's software before. I know one guy is already, Mr. Todd McClanrock himself. Of my flight blog, he said that, you know, well, actually, I was the one that kind of introduced him to it. We were kind of messing around with it.
Are you on a commission plan?
Yeah, exactly. That's 25 cents. Jake. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But he said, he thinks it's an outstanding tool. But
yeah.
I'm kind of curious how many people listening right now have ever used it.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Actually, Jake, and I'll remind our audience, we're talking to Jake Eitling, that young 25-year-old with an airplane owner, and we're just finding out technologists. I know as we kind of run out of time here, you had mentioned that you're starting another website, and I'd like to hear a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. So, I don't know. I've been sitting on this site. I wrote it a couple months ago, actually. And as I'm sort of gearing up to get my instrument rating in the next couple of months, hopefully. And, as part of that, I realized that my knowledge of weather is terrible. You know, I before this, I you know, my weather briefing was pull up the METAR, pull up the TAF, and sort of kind of go, oh, okay, it's blue, I shouldn't fly. Or and I still have this moment. I took an instrument lesson like years ago, and it was raining, and we were gonna go, and the flight instructor, she asked me, so why is it raining? And I was like, I have no idea. You know, and of course it's, well, there's low pressure, and of course then you learn low pressure leads to instability, blah, 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 blah. There's all these things that lead up to causing weather that you then end up with that blue METAR. But like, there's so much that goes into it, before you get to that point. And I have always been woefully bad at understanding that stuff. So I kind of wanted to get better at it. And so I built this tool to send me, the forecast discussion. So the National Weather Service, when they're writing the forecast every day, or actually every couple of hours they do it.
Yeah.
Like every 5 hours or 6 hours or something. They basically, you know, these meteorologists, they look at the computer models and they go, okay, here's what the computer thinks is going to happen. Here's what we think is going to happen based on the computer models, blah, 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 blah. Here's why we think this. This is what's going to happen. This is like historically what's happened, yada, yada, yada. And they actually write it sort of like a blog post, format. It's sort of just like a stream of consciousness, and they put these out every couple hours, and I found they're fantastically useful for looking at to sort of get a real understanding of like how the weather behaves, get into the mind of the weather kind of. And the key to it is doing it every day, whether you're flying or not, looking at the weather, because then you start to learn the like large scale patterns. You start to learn like, okay, oh, there's high pressure today. You know, usually I'll have high pressure for a couple of days, or there's a low and it's moving, so I'm going to have like, you know, we're going to have warm rain for a couple of days, and it's going to cool down as the cold front comes around the other side of the low, and you start to learn all these really cool things that you would never guess just by looking at METARs and TAFs on the day you're flying. So anyway, I wrote this app It's called weatherbrief.me is the website. Weatherbrief.me. Weatherbrief me. It's clever, right? but what it does is, it basically sends you every morning, it sends you an email with the current weather discussion, and it sends you what I think, and I'm not a meteorologist, I'm barely a pilot, but it sends the forecast discussion, the 500 millibar chart, which is the like, what the pressure is at like 500, the pressure gradients at 500, at like 18,000 feet, and it sends you the like surface analysis, which I think like those two pieces of data combined with the forecast discussion make up like a really, really good narrative for the weather. And once again, not a meteorologist, I'm just a guy. But I have found that looking at these, every day has really improved like my ability to sort of understand the weather and be able to make like judgments and like sort of like, and not just like one day go no goes, but like sort of I'm getting ready for a 3-day trip, like, you know, like having this kind of like, just like, I like to think it's getting into the mind of the weather, understanding like what the weather's thinking, and yeah, and like, you know, it's not all gonna like, it's not all you're gonna need. You're gonna need to study and sort of understand like what causes the weather and the difference between low and high pressure and stuff like that. There are books for that, but like this is like a really nice supplement to like traditional weather like literature reading, that I think is really helpful. Yeah. But I just wrote it. I've only been using it myself and like a friend of mine for like the past like couple weeks. So, please send me feedback. Like I really want to like make it something that's useful for people. So if you have suggestions, just if you reply to the emails that it sends you or just email me, like you'll, I would love to like improve on it. Cause it, you know, it's another one of these things I built for myself and I would just love for other people to use it too.
Yeah.
If it's useful.
So. Yeah.
Great. Like, yeah, please send me like feedback of other information you think could be included or like, you know, little tricks and, yeah, I kind of just want to, you know, I don't know, another little thing to hack on.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been getting like a flood of tweets and text messages here. Somebody, people are looking forward to using this and, I just got one text message. Sounds like a very cool thing. And,
I got one here just signed up.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, no, I think this is actually a really good tool, and I think it would be a outstanding tool to teach people in, you know, in lessons.
Well, Jake, and you probably know this, you're not alone, and I just look to myself that after all my years, I still say that the weather is my weakest link, and it needs to be one of my stronger ones. So hopefully you can help me. I'm going to sign up after the show is done.
Awesome.
Before bed. And,
I just signed up.
Did you? Well,
yeah.
I'm too busy.
I'm looking at it right now.
I got three screens in front of me. I got a laptop going. I got an iPad going. I got an iPhone going. So I'm kind of a techie.
You know what? I got to mention real quick how many screens we have now to do this.
So that's one, two, three, awesome. Four, five, six, seven. We have seven screens.
Seven of them now. I just got
is this six? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. We got seven screens for two people.
Well, I can add one, two, three, four, five computer screens.
Yes.
And one iPhone here.
Perfect.
So,
that's outstanding. That's a good, that's the right number of screens.
It's like I'm in my simulator man cave here doing the podcast.
All I know is I don't have any plans to get to San Francisco. When I'm out there, I want to see this sim setup you have.
I'll do you one better. You can see that, and then I'll show you my real setup. If you know, the right seat's open to anybody who's
all
in
right.
the area. So
yeah, well, and when you get to Chicago, we'd love to take you up. I know we had talked earlier about going up in the SR-22. Actually, I got Alex, the owner of an SR-20, a different Alex in this, in our studio audience tonight. And I'm sure he'd love to take you up. So when you come to Chicago, we'll give you not only a Skyline tour, but from four different airplanes.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you, I have to do the whole, the whole, Chicago area, cause I have there's a guy on Reddit who flies, decathlons. Is there Aurora? Is that an airport?
Yeah,
that's down on the south side.
Yeah, there's a guy on our on our Reddit that flies does amazing acro work in a decathlon, and he sort of has an open invitation to anybody who wants to ride along as well. So, cool. If I bring the Cherokee out east sometime, I'm gonna swing through for sure.
Please, awesome. Please do. There's I guess I want to mention that one more time because this is kind of a special subject for me. I'm always looking for new ways to promote aviation and think it's really nice. And you just said Reddit and you kind of helped build a aviation community on Reddit, didn't you?
Yeah, a little bit. So, if anybody's used Reddit, you'll probably think of it as mostly a place for like, annoying memes and cat videos, but, the site, like if you get into it really and, sign up and unsubscribe from all the junk. It's actually a collection of sub-communities. And so a couple of years ago I started r/pilots, which is a sub-community for pilots. And I gave the ability to like sort of customize your username to have like your current ratings and like what you were working on and all this stuff. And it really started to take off. And then I stopped flying. And so I subsequently lost interest in the Reddit, and then people, they eventually ended up migrating it to r/flying. So if you go to reddit.com/r/flying, that's where it lives now. And it's this great little community of pilots, skewing younger probably, because Reddit's a site born out of, like, you know, college for a lot of us. But, it's this really great place for discussion. I forget how we got onto this. But, oh, I told you I have a Reddit friend who has a standing invitation, but there's always people posting videos and stuff. And one thing I've noticed is that I feel like we're making a lot of reach. Like, we're reaching a lot of people who normally wouldn't have thought about aviation. And this is sort of why I have this thesis about just needing to get it into people's faces. Because, you know, we had a big spike in followers on there. You know, we went from like a couple thousand to like, we're up to 7,100 subscribers on this subreddit right now. And, nice. You know, I've noticed I should do some formal analysis, like pull the data and like see how many like, hey, I'm just startings, we have. But, you know, since we've had this spike, I've noticed a serious uptick in number of people either wanting to start flying or going for their first lessons. And, you know, so it's a great community. If anybody's interested, reddit.com/r/flying. It's got a special place in my heart. Shout out to everybody
Reddit,
on there.
R-E-D-I-T?
It's reddit.com. And then the flying subreddit is like reddit.com/r/flying.
Okay. Yeah. I've actually started to kind of mess around. I'm kind of an observer at the moment, still trying to absorb it all. And I think it's pretty cool. There's a lot of subscribers in that group. There's like almost like 5,000 people or something like that?
Yeah, we're up to 7,000 right now.
7,000, yeah.
That's yeah, awesome. And a lot of those are pilots, and you'll get pilots from basically every corner of the aviation gamut. Yeah. Yeah, we have military pilots. We have people in Europe. We have people, a ton of commercial pilots, not commercialized, I mean like ATP people. We've got tons of like people flying for companies, like, and it's a great place. And one of the best things about it is it's a really cool place for people to get like outside opinions, because a lot of times when you're working with just you and an instructor, that's sort of like your only connection to the aviation community.
Yeah.
Our flying is great because you can like throw out a question and get like the opinion of like four or five CFIs that are just like hanging out on there, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a great resource for anybody, and it's a great outreach tool as well. So
yeah, oh, that's cool. Outstanding. I love it. I love it.
It must be awesome.
It is awesome.
I know. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Exactly. Oh, it looks like a lot of people here on Twitter. You know, they're saying that they're going to they're in the transition of switching. You know, getting a new computer and they got to reload Flight Simulator, but they said they're all going to check out your FSX software, and I think a handful of people just signed up for weatherbrief.me.
Yeah, I'm seeing that too. Very good.
That's outstanding.
I can't wait to see the numbers. I can't wait to get some feedback, mostly, is what I'm excited about. If anybody is considering getting FSX, I would urge you to take a look at Prepared, which is Lockheed Martin's now owns Flight Simulator X.
Cool.
They bought the IP for it, so If you're looking at getting into simulating flight, if you're a pilot and haven't done it yet, or, you know, or if you're wanting to get back into it, take a look at Prepared. I think it's like $50 for the academic license, which you can basically do any sort of things at home with. And it's supposed to be a little bit better. I haven't tried it myself, but they plugged my app on their site, so I feel like I owe it to them.
Turnabout, fair play.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
Yeah.
Hey, Jake, before we let you go, maybe, kind of during the hangar talk session here, would you mind sending out a tweet, with the name of that book that you mentioned earlier on, and kind of aircraft ownership and along with the author? I've been getting some tweets about, people asking about that book that you mentioned.
Sure, yeah. I'll pass that along. I'll email it to you if you want to throw it up on the website too. I'll get that to you for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Great. Well, Jake, this has been, outstanding.
Uplifting.
Yeah, it is uplifting. I'm excited. This is just, you know, the passion, you can hear your passion for aviation.
Oh!
Just, yeah.
I love airplanes!
That
yeah!
sounds like Ron Jeremy. No. Yeah. Yeah! No, that's good. I love it, man. And, that's really, you know, aviation needs more people like you, and it looks like we got like, all the people on Twitter, participating, asking questions. I think I kind of feel the aviation bubble kind of percolating here a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, I agree. It makes me wish, you know, whatever, how many years ago that was, I should have gotten started.
Yeah.
But, we got people like Jake. So Jake Eiding, we really appreciate you taking the time. I know we'll stay in touch. And we wish you a great night and blue skies.
Yeah.
Yes. Awesome. Absolutely. Thanks guys. It was great having me.
Yeah.
Had a great time.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks. Appreciate it. Have a great night.
See ya.
All right. Bye-bye. See ya. Wow, that was awesome.
That was, like I say, I don't know if it was uplifting or depressing because he's done so much more than I did, and now I'm like feeling bad about myself.
Well, that's a good challenge. It's a good example. Actually,
absolutely,
somebody,
yes.
I just got a contact form. Somebody filled that out, and they said, Jake is one of a kind. He really did break the mold. And, they're really glad that he was on the show.
Yeah, and I thought it was a great show. I knew some of the things, obviously, as we prepped for the show, but, talking to Jake and hearing him, very impressed. Obviously very intelligent. I love the fact that he has that, maybe in my age we would have called it gumption, but just the go get 'em type attitude to, you know, like I say, at 25, buy an airplane and write some code and earns the Stratus, and I don't know.
It's a great way to fuel. That's like, so that I look at that as an inspiration because, you know, it gets tougher and tougher to fly, right? And, you know, to use your creativity and outside talents. I've been saying this since day one since I joined our flying club, is that everybody has outstanding outside talents that can apply to aviation.
Right, I agree.
And Jake's a great example of that. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out, like, oh man, I don't have any talents outside of aviation. They're all in here. I gotta figure out how to organize them to put fuel in the fuel tanks.
Well, I have to confess, as I did online or on the air with the meteorology being my weak link, my problem is I still don't think I can learn that stuff. I mean, I think I can make safe decisions, but that to be able to look at a picture and then go ahead and translate it into how much turbulence, how much weather, what I'm going to feel, is there ice, are the clouds juicy, as we like to say?
Yeah.
Those kinds of things.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh, that was great. Yeah, I think that's outstanding.
What's going on here?
Well, so there's a, Simple Flight actually has a little something to celebrate.
Okay, I see it out here. It's taking me back in history.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I used to buy some of these things and then eat them by myself.
Exactly.
Do we have a special guest coming?
No, unfortunately we don't, but I absolutely want to send out a great shout out to the other face of Simple Flight and mention him. Mr. Travis Ammon.
Yes, Travis.
It's his birthday today.
Ah,
How about that?
Happy birthday to you.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Travis.
So he, anyway, we have a celebratory cake. He's not here.
We got a chocolate cake roll. So it's like a big ding dong.
Exactly.
Only it'll serve about 10 people.
And it's sitting in front of me.
Yeah. And who is that voice we just heard? Do you want to introduce him?
Yeah, so this is the one of the other Alexes in the room.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Alex Katulis himself.
I'm used to being a minority, but not because of name.
Yeah, you know, he's staring this little chocolate log cake down.
That's
like it's no big
cake.
Deal. And
yeah. That actually looks pretty good.
Yeah, you're going to have to open this up, and we're going to have to celebrate.
Yeah, and we don't even have to light a candle and melt wax over
exactly.
it.
We're going to make some wishes. Wishes. You know.
When are you going to see? You're not flying with him tomorrow in the cake.
I am not, but he's got the birthday week off.
Nice.
How about that? But he was handling a lot of the tweeting tonight and did a great job of getting people involved. And I think it was just outstanding.
As always.
Yeah, definitely. So we're going to have to enjoy some cake. And I know what I'm going to wish for.
A citation?
I was going bigger than that.
A G? A golf
fan? No.
Boeing Business Jet.
No.
But don't get mad at me.
I was going to go for an old 767-200.
Oh, okay. You couldn't park it here.
So, we got O'Hare International Airport just down the road.
You know what? When I flew into O'Hare the other day, I got to tell you, I now look for all the general aviation airports as we do the approach. And we went right, Milwaukee was right there.
Nice.
Yeah, it was like, hey, that's my airport. Yay! So, Alex, what kind of flying did you do this week?
I didn't do any, to be honest with you.
What? Slacker.
He is a slacker. Why do we allow that? I don't think he gets any cake tonight.
No.
Yeah, I didn't go any place, and it's a little sad. It would have been nice to go out this weekend, but I got to get Al in here so we can start those approaches, hopefully maybe next weekend or two.
Yeah.
And start banging those out. And I still got to go. I still haven't made that appointment to get the written class done. So
yeah, when you get that done, we'll go.
That is like the biggest barrier. Everyone tells me the commercial is one of the easiest ratings, but I just can't get that written done, and I'm not taking the time. So I admit it's my own fault to study up, and I have this competitive spirit that says I don't want to take it to get a 70. I want to, ace it, but. I don't know. I need to do that. I really want to get that rating just to get it off my back. That monkey on the back.
Yeah, get it off there.
Yeah, I need to.
Yeah, I'll go up this week, but, if you're not available, Mark, you and I can go.
Absolutely. I love playing safety pilot. I'm actually kind of a CFI, CFII wannabe. And so since I don't have the rating, but I feel like, from the right side, I'm usually pretty critical of people, so I can see you do all the wrong things.
Because we haven't been up together for a while, you and I, don't think.
It's been a very long time. Yeah. It was last before your airplane went into maintenance, so that was a long time ago.
Yeah. Hey, I just got a tweet, and it said, it sounds like Alex Katulis has a Jersey accent.
No, it's my sinuses are bothering me. that's the case. No, I was born and raised in Chicago here all my life.
Yeah, so we all have that Chicago accent. Mm. I love
actually,
it.
I say Chicago like an AW, and I remember in college, I met this young lady, and she said, "I love the way you say Chicago." So that's all I said to her. I didn't say anything but the word Chicago.
Smart man. Anyway, but you know what? I didn't realize I had a Chicago accent until I started listening to the playbacks of our show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought I was Midwestern normal, just kind of neutral. But then I sit there and I cringe listening to myself with the Chicago accent.
I cringe
accent.
Listening to you too, but it has nothing to do with an accent.
He's got the Burt Reynolds laugh.
Yeah,
he does.
I still got to play that YouTube video for you, Mark. You got to check that out later.
Well, maybe tonight after thing. I mean, we're only like 5 minutes from 10 o'clock. Now this
well,
is
that's
where
a
I
Twitter,
get depressed.
That's a Twitter question, real quick. What kind of laugh do I have?
Well, I don't know you have to do the one where you really find something super funny and you have that.
Like when I tell a joke?
it's not the laugh that he's doing right now. It's the one where You have that, thing at the end. I can't do it because my sinuses are bothering me. I'll sound like an idiot, but that's it. Right there, that ending. You know, YouTube, Smokey and the Bandit. You know, watch it when he's laying on his hammock and whatever, Mr. Big and Mr. Little, I think of who they were, small or I don't know who it was, the guys with the blue suits that come up and they go abandoned and you hear him laughing. It's Al Waterloo.
That's it. I would never pick that out.
And I heard it a couple of months ago. I T-voted on the TV and I watched the episode and I haven't seen Smokey and the Bandit forever and I go up with Al and we take this trip to Phoenix and back and I said, God, I know that laugh. Where is it? And so, when I got back from Phoenix, my wife and I said, have you seen Smokey and the Bandit? And she goes, no. So we watched it because she was a kid as well when it came out. So she didn't really, you know, none of us really got it until you watch it again later on as an adult. And there it was Al Waterloo on TV. So I immediately emailed him right away and just said, there you are.
Actually, talking about old movies, and this isn't much of a hanger talk, but we're having fun as, tonight or this afternoon, I was watching The Blues Brothers, which is a favorite old movie of mine.
So that's something I got to watch again as well, because I was a kid when I saw it. And
that's
I don't
a good movie.
It, so.
Yeah,
you know what's a good old movie or a good series aviation-wise are the airport movies.
That was Airplane was on. Not Airport, but Airplane.
Airplane.
Followed the Blues Brothers. So I watched a little bit of that.
Nice.
Joey, did you ever see a grown man naked?
That's I thought that was pretty I kind of like the old airport series and everything like that. I thought those were really good. The first one with Dean Martin, you remember that one?
I remember the first one. I had forgotten that Dean Martin was in it.
Yeah, it was like basically a Boeing commercial and what was the mechanic's name? I'm blanking out. If anybody knows on Twitter what the mechanic's name in airport was. It was like Gambino or something like that. And, they get the 707 stuck in the snow and he ends up powering it out and everything like that. That was a good movie.
Now you make me want to go watch that again.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, as we approach here, the final approach or into our final landing, what does our show look like next week?
Well, next week we have, some really good friends of mine.
You're friends with everybody.
Yeah.
You're just a nice guy.
Well, no, actually, this Simple Flight and KingAirNation.com have a really a special bond that they started. They launched their website KingAirNation.com the day that I had the first radio show, and that was at Oshkosh this year.
Yeah.
And Danny Carpenter of KingAirNation.com is coming on. He's got some really cool updates on how he's trying to build a community for, the Beechcraft King Air. And, you know, it's not just for people that fly it or maintain them. It's probably, Mark, you'd fit the bill. And I know you would, that you would love this website.
I love all the communities that aviation has to offer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I sneak in. Kind of
the
back door.
Well, you've sat in the King Air before, and you're like, oh,
I updated
man,
the database once.
You did.
Yeah.
It was great. So that was, he's going to be coming on, next week, Danny Carpenter.
Yeah, we mentioned it last week. I'm just excited. We've really accelerated, if you will, with the program and appreciate all the listenership that's continued to, I don't know if I can use the word explode, but let's just say grow. And now we have our show set from a guest perspective all the way through March, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We got some cool things happening and cool guests, lined up down the road and all that. But, I can't tell you enough, how much we appreciate everybody listening and tweeting in and emailing and texting. We're also, hopefully you may have noticed on the Simple Flight, the homepage or the radio page, we're broadcasting live via Google Hangouts. So, very soon, we'll invite everybody to come hang out with us.
Do they have to invite us, or if they just go to Simple Flight, do they see us?
If they go to Simple Flight, the radio page, they'll see us, me and you, broadcasting.
And they can join us then by hanging out with us.
Yeah, they can join us by hanging out. You just find us on, Google Plus, and, we're hanging out there on Google Plus.
We'll get a little video going. That was one of the goals for 2013 was to add a video piece to this, constantly evolving the program.
Yeah.
Taking advantage of the enabling technologies that exist.
Right. And just like Jake said, if anybody has any suggestions for him, please let us know if you have any suggestions for us. This is definitely everybody's show, and we're always looking for ways to make it better.
I agree. So to me, it's a work in progress. A work in process maybe is a better thing to say. And we need to get better and meet the needs of our listening audience, and so we do look forward to any feedback you guys want to give us.
Definitely. Well, anyway, I can't believe it. I like 8 o'clock and I hate 10 o'clock.
Right. Well, we started at 8:02, I think, today, so we can go to 10:02.
Oh, perfect.
Which means like 1 minute now. I look on the clock and like I see
we have a couple seconds left. Yeah.
Alex, any parting thoughts from you?
No, I'm just going to hang out with you guys here and have the cake. And
that cake is calling my name.
Afterwards.
Eat me.
I love it. But anyway, so it's time for cake and coffee here as we wind down. Just right. That's a perfect thing to put in our stomachs for before bed, that's okay. Anyway, I hope everybody has a great week this week. We want to hear your aviation stories. What did you do in aviation the upcoming week? And hey, if you want to record it, your own ATIS, and we could play it on the show for you, and all that. So we should have an ATIS contest.
ATIS contest. We should also have people do their own little mini, not blogs, but mini comments, and maybe we can start to play some.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll have to work on that. But if you have something you want to send us, just
we need to get somebody to record
a. How do they send a file, a WAV file, an MP3 file? How do they get it to you?
Oh, that's pretty simple. They can email it.
That's pretty simple. Flight.net.
Yes, exactly. We'll figure out a way. There's a way, but we'll get a. I like that. Let's whoever wants to record an ATIS for the weather report. Let us know and send it over, and we'll
and where do they send it? Truly, I mean,
So they can send it. If they go to simpleflight.net, there's a contact form at the bottom of each page. You can send that, and then or say that you're interested, and we'll work out with you to
get that attachment to
it. You can reach out through Twitter, Facebook, all that, and we'll get it figured out.
But perfect,
excellent. Well, great show tonight. Thank you very much to Jake Eiding for coming on. Mark, it's been an outstanding pleasure as always.
You as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to you. Personal jinx.
You owe me a Coke.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, everybody have a great week in aviation. We'll see you next week. And as always, blue skies.
And tailwinds.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.